And we're your hosts. I'm Diane Bortoletto.
And I'm Monique Chicardo.
Let's do it.
Hello, hello, and welcome to And Away We Go F1 podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel, food, and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm your co-host, Diane Bortoletto, and I'm your pre-Drive to Survive Formula One fan. And today I'm in a new office in Margaret River, well, a new room at home in Margaret River. So this is where I am today.
I'm Monique Chicardo, your post-Drive to Survive fan. And today I'm sitting in, I'm so sorry, guys. I'm sitting in an overwater bungalow on Hawa Island, just off the coast of, it's just off the coast of Qatar, but it's owned by the Bahraini government or Bahrain. Hello.
Oh, how nice. How nice. It just sounds amazing. Yeah, well, we've just had the Bahrain Grand Prix, which we're going to unpack. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about qualifying. We're going to talk about Mon in Bahrain and everything that you've been able to see and do, as well as your experience in the paddock club at qualifying. Where do you want to start?
Yeah. I know where we're going to start because I gosh damn lost my mind. Oscar Piastri is this week's star. What better place to start than Oscar Piastri coming in pole and winning?
I know. It was a flawless performance through qualifying where he just put in a stellar lap. It should be noted that McLaren have never won in Bahrain before. And the McLaren team is majority owned by the royal family of Bahrain.
The entire McLaren brand is actually owned by the Bahraini royal family. So McLaren is Bahraini now.
It's like a second home race for them. Our boy Oscar, the Aussie, so good to see him just put in such a dominant and stellar performance. And we had a safety car during the race. So all the competitors bunched up behind him and George Russell was right on his tail. But when the restart happened, Oscar just held him off and came through and took the checkered flag.
It was phenomenal. He finished 11 seconds ahead of the rest of the field. So unfortunately, in these circumstances, when you do put in such a flawless performance and you're miles ahead of the field, you never really hear or see them racing. So we didn't hear or see much of Oscar because he was just out the front having his own race. But at the same time, how can you complain with that? He had such a wonderful, wonderful race. In qualifying, I stood there and I screamed and punched the air when he qualified in pole, and everyone around me was laughing at me because they knew that I was gunning for Oscar, which was also very convenient given the people that I was there with and McLaren being Bahraini. And then we had a watch party to watch the race and I screamed at the start because George Russell came up so close behind Oscar and locked up, and I was so scared that he was going to hit Oscar and take Oscar out.
I was worried about Oscar perhaps being taken out as well at lap one, as well as at the restart after the safety car. And we should say that when the safety car came out, Oscar was 7 seconds ahead at that point as well. So he just dominated the whole race, which is just fantastic.
That safety car that came out was so well-timed for literally everyone except Antonelli. So the safety car came out because, was it when Yuki took a big chunk out the side of Sainz's car? And Sainz had to retire, and then they had to bring out a safety car to clear the track of any debris. It was just so well-timed for everyone. So Oscar was the first one in to come in and change his tyres because he hadn't had a pit stop yet. Well, I think he'd had one pit stop.
Yeah, but it was a two-stop strategy
for everyone.
Yeah.
Except for Antonelli, because he had literally just stopped to change his tyres, and then he came back through and put another set of softs on, which he was already on. So poor Antonelli, he lost so much track position because of that. But it was really, really, really well timed for the top five.
it really was. And it was just such an exciting race. I mean, after last week, which was a kind of non-eventful, this race was so exciting because so many of the teams and the drivers were on different strategies to each other within the team. And different strategies all round, really, but different tyre choices, which really made the difference. Like the hard tyres just didn't really fire up.
Oh my God.
Bahrain.
Can we talk about Ferrari? What the hell was Ferrari's strategy?
Oh God, I don't know. the top three, Oscar Piastri, George Russell and Lando Norris, who qualified in sixth. He didn't have a great qualifying lap. And then the two Ferraris, Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton in fourth and fifth. Max Verstappen in sixth, Pierre Gasly in seventh, Esteban Ocon in the Haas in eighth. Yuki Tsunoda scored points in the Red Bull in ninth. And Ollie Bearman, who's my driver of the day, finished in 10th. He's in the points for Haas, and also he qualified in 20th. So he gained 10 places on the race for a rookie.
Unheard of, right? It was such a good run for him. And I think he was the highest placed rookie, yes, of the day.
Yes, because Antonelli was behind him in 11th, so he narrowly missed out on points. Albon in 12th, Hadjar in 13th in the Racing Bulls, Jack Doohan in Alpine in 14th, our Aussie, Fernando Alonso in the Aston Martin in 15th, Liam Lawson in the other Racing Bulls in 16th, Lance Stroll, the other Aston Martin, 17th, Gabriel Bortoleto from in the Sauber, you know, my cousin, one T, not two, in 18th, and then Carlos Sainz did not finish. And Nico Hülkenberg got disqualified.
That's right, for having too much wear on his skid block. Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's the same as what Hamilton was disqualified for. So they've got this plate underneath the car. So when you see all those sparks flying up, right, that's the plate hitting the tarmac as they're driving. Mm. So the FIA allows for a little bit of wear, but rules are rules. Hamilton got disqualified and at least they're being consistent. Mm-hmm. But, oh my God, penalties. Yeah. Whoa. How many penalties were they?
I have not even kept up. Obviously, like, I was a little bit distracted watching the race too.
Yeah, you would have been.
There was, what, Norris got a penalty? Didn't Doohan end up getting a penalty somewhere in there as well?
Just one moment.
Yeah, you're going to have to tell me because I'm confused.
I'm looking up this new app, which is Formula Live Pulse, which the founder of this app reached out to us and he's very kindly given me pro access to check it out. And in that app, you can see all of the penalties. Confession, I didn't actually use it while I was watching the race because I was just in the race. And I also had my 18-year-old niece with me. It's taking me 18 years to get her into Formula One, but she's now a Formula One fan and wanted to stay up and watch the race, which started, it was lights out at 11 p.m. in Western Australia. The 1 a.m. finish, way past my bedtime, but well worth staying up for. On the app, it shows the pit stops, the tyre starts. It's even got team radio. It's so good. I'll play an Oscar Piastri team radio. Let's see if this works.
So, man, if you want a little bit party tonight. Well done, mate. Well done. That's the first time we've won our second home Grand Prix. You've been pretty flawless all weekend, so great job.
Have a mega week, Heather. Mega.
Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. He's just so chill, isn't he? He's like, mega, mega. Yeah. It's better than simply lovely.
Yes. And then there's also a race control section, and you can filter the notifications by penalty or lap deleted or safety car or anything. But it's a very cool app for Formula One fans that just want to know all the details or, you know, you've heard something on the broadcast and you're like, what? What was that for? And you don't want to stop and rewind because the action's right in front of you. Yeah, there were lots of penalties. One,
penalty,
two,
penalty,
three,
penalty,
four,
penalty.
Five, six penalties.
Who got penalties?
Norris, 5-second penalty for a false start.
That's right.
Yeah, he rolled forward and his tyres were over the box.
The grid box, yeah.
One of the tyres was. Lawson got a 5-second penalty for causing a collision. 10-second penalty, Carlos Sainz, for forcing another driver off the track. 10-second penalty for Lawson for causing a collision. So he got two penalties. Not a great day for Lawson. And Jack Doohan, 5-second penalty for exceeding track limits.
It's such a great race to watch because the track is really, really nice. You could go three wide on this track and people were overtaking. There's a whole lot more racing, which meant there was a whole lot more action, which meant that there were a whole lot more penalties because people were pushing people off.
Fun fact. So the surface of the Bahrain Grand Prix is 21 years old. It's older than four of the drivers on the grid.
Yeah. It was funny because one of the guys that we were with was like, yeah, this is the 21st year that the GP's been held in Bahrain. And it's like, sorry, I keep saying it the way they've told me to say it. That's how the Bahrainis say Bahrain. the first of all the Middle Eastern countries to have a Formula One race. So it's the oldest Formula One race in the Middle East as well. But just quickly before we discuss, because I really need to discuss with you this Ferrari strategy, because I'm not happy. But also, you said surface, and I took home a little piece, a little memo from the racetrack. It is a piece of Pirelli rubber that I literally picked off the pit lane track.
Hold it up to the camera. Give us a closer look.
So it's a medium-walled tire because it's yellow. I saw it and I picked it off and I'm like, am I crazy or am I genius? I don't know. I'm going to get home and I'm going to have this piece of Pirelli rubber that has come from something to remind me of my time at the Bahrain International Circuit. But anyway, you just reminded me when you said surface.
And because the surface hasn't been resurfaced in 21 years, it's quite coarse and it does degrade the tyres quite quickly.
Yeah. So that could be anyone's tyre.
It could be. And I think you've got to come up with a better story than I just found this piece of tyre. What about, you know, Piastri was zooming past and a bit of his tyre came off.
It flicked me.
And I caught it like I was at the MCG catching a ball at the cricket.
It's much cooler than being like, oh, I bent down and like literally pried it off with my nails. Speaking of tyres, can we please talk about what the hell Ferrari were thinking with their tyre strategy?
All right.
So what did they started on mediums, right?
Charles Leclerc was on mediums. So his tyre strategy was medium, medium, hard. So the last.
So stupid. Sorry, continue on.
And Hamilton was the same, actually, medium, medium, hard.
Yeah.
But they didn't use the softs, and the soft tyres didn't degrade at the rate that the teams perhaps thought the soft tyres might degrade. They actually held up pretty well, and they were like a much better tyre. I mean, Hamilton even came on the team radio and said, these tyres suck, you know, when the hards went on. So
the hards, yes.
And they have to use two different compounds in every race, right?
That's a must. Mm. But Max really struggled on his hard tyres too. And that was before the free pit stop. And Ferrari still chose to do the last stint on the hards. They had seen Max struggling on those tyres. But the thing that I found really funny was obviously they chose to go onto those hard tyres and George Russell panicked because behind him there were people on mediums and hards and he was on the soft and he was like, that's an audacious strategy. Like, going to the end on softs.
I think it was 24 laps or 27 laps or something that he had to make the softs last for. I feel like the Ferrari, I feel like they decide what their strategy is before the race. Like they have plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D, plan 100. As we know, obviously we're not there.
Opinion's good. We love opinion.
It feels as if the Ferrari strategists don't look at what the other teams are doing and make adjustments. Mm-hmm. It feels like they sort of decide their strategy. If there's rain, we do this. If, you know, it's a two-stop, we do that. If it's a three-stop, we do this. But they don't go, oh, Max is struggling on the hards. Let's not put the hards on. Let's put the softs on for the last 25 laps because someone else was on the softs and they did 22 laps, no problem. I feel like they're not nimble enough to do that. That's an outsider's view that knows absolutely nothing that's going on inside the Ferrari team.
Interesting race for strategy across the board, I think, because two-stop races are always interesting in that respect because you have two opportunities to make a decision on what tyre you're going to go on, when you're going to go in, and that always throws some spanners in the works because you've got so many more variables. Even just the fact that there was such variation in what tyres people chose to start on and what they chose to put on, it made for quite the exciting race.
Oh, I actually took a photo of the television towards the end of the race, but you can see all the different colours of all the different tyres that all the drivers are on. And that was taken on lap 34 of 57. Medium, soft, hard, medium, hard, 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 medium, hard, hard, soft, soft. Just such a mix, which it really made for an exciting race.
One of the ladies that I was watching the race with, she's from, well, she lives between New York and Miami, and she's been to so many races.
Oh, wow.
We were sitting there watching. Yeah, she's really cool. But we're sitting there watching it and she was like, what are Ferrari doing? Oh my gosh. She was just, for ages, she sat there and she was like, I don't understand what they've done. Why have they done this?
So my driver of the day was Ollie Bearman. Who was your driver of the day?
Oh, I just can't go past Oscar. I can't.
Yeah, of course.
We really haven't spoken all that much about him because, again, he was just in a league of his own. He basically Max Verstappen'd the race. He did a Max Verstappen. He just took off and he was like, I'm racing my own race. And we don't see him on the TV. We don't hear him on the radio because nothing's happening with him out the front.
I think we need to change adjectives or synonyms or no, what do we call it? Because Max Verstappen doesn't do that anymore. You know, not 2023 anymore.
Yes. He 2023 Max Verstappen did.
Yes. 2023 Max Verstappen did. Quali. You were at quali. You were at qualifying Mon. You were in the paddock club.
I was.
Tell us everything from start to finish.
Right. So I woke up and no.
We save all the good bits for the pod for you guys. So yeah, I'm so keen to hear.
Oh my gosh. It was honestly amazing. We were guests of, this is very convoluted and I'm going to try and put it into a nice little package. We were guests of the Premier Group. They're a hotel group and they own the hotel that I'm currently staying in, Hawa Resort by Mantis, which is a brand new resort on Hawa Island. So yes, they own this hotel, which is our association with them, and their association with the Formula One is that their sister companies, the ones that own a non-controlling share in McLaren Racing, and they own McLaren. And obviously, McLaren is owned by the House of Khalifa, which is the royal family. Yeah, there's lots of lots of danglies everywhere. But anyway, we were a guest of the Premier Group. So we had a suite that was fully catered. We were over top the Haas garage. So right next to us was the RB garage and the Alpine garage. So I could see Jack Doohan walking to and from the garage and to the pit wall. And yeah, on the other side, there was the paddock. So on the other side, we could see, you know, Jack Doohan and Ollie Bearman and your cousin, Gabriel Bortoletto, one T, not two, and I saw Alonso and Binotto, and they were all walking to and from the garage to their offices. And unfortunately, we didn't have the access to get down there. The only people that do are the VIP guests, so they're the guests of the teams themselves and Rolex and stuff like that.
Rolex, Mon, wash your mouth out.
Well, last year, Rolex, tag Hua, Hua? I can't say it properly.
Yeah, I say Tag Heuer. And Tag's part of the LVMH group.
Who's the major sponsor. But yeah, we didn't have the access to the drivers. But I did see Jack and he was so close. And I embarrassed myself and yelled out, Aussie, Aussie, Aussie. And I embarrassed myself and he didn't even hear me. So,
oh, that's the worst. I mean, one thing to embarrass yourself and then get a wave or get a nod or get even a look in your direction.
It would have been worth it. No, he didn't hear because the music was too loud. But yeah, the suite that we were in was a dry suite. So there was no alcohol because obviously, which I'll get into this in a little bit because it's not exactly what you think. But then there's like an open area of the paddock club where they have like live music and more food and a bar that's pouring free-flowing Moet, that's pouring free-flowing Whispering Angel, if that's what you're into. And so you could go and get, you know, your champagne there if you wanted to. It was just advised, try not to bring it back into the suite. Mm-hmm. They had this really lively section with live music and big screens and couches for you to sit down and watch the race. And yeah, it was fantastic. And I was playing Spotto with all the drivers and the team principals and the marketing and PR ladies from this resort were like, oh, so can you like see drivers from like when in the paddock club or whatever? And I was like, yeah, generally. Oh yeah, look, there's Ollie Bearman right there.
It's actually really nice going to a race with somebody that doesn't know much about Formula One, which was exactly my case as well in Australia, because then you get to bring someone else into the fold, which is, you know, one of the most rewarding things you can do in your life is to help someone else become a Formula One fan.
Absolutely. Mm. Can I tell you my proudest moment though? So the GM of this hotel, Andre, he's so lovely. And he spent so much of the day introducing me to people. And he was like, she's such a big Formula One fan. We're walking along the pit lane, which if you're in the paddock club, this is one of the benefits that you get. You can do a pit lane walk. And we're walking up past the Ferrari garage. A couple of the engineers were standing out there, you know, talking to people. And Andre started having a chat to this engineer. And he was like, oh, so I'm just so happy for you guys. You know, I can't wait to see Lewis up there on the podium. And I looked at Andre and I was like, he has been on the podium. And he was like, yeah, but you know, like on the top step of the podium. And I was like, he has been on the top step of the podium. He won in China. And the And the engineer looked at me, winked at me, and he was like, you know what you're talking about? And I was like,
oh, yeah.
I wasn't trying to be rude or anything, but, you know, I was like, but he has one.
Oh, getting cred from a Ferrari engineer. I mean, Mon, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. After that, Andre was like, oh my gosh, he's the biggest Formula One fan.
We said it last week. We're both obsessed to the point where we've got this podcast that we push out every single week because we love Formula One so much and we love talking about it. We love watching it. We love reading about it. We love everything about it.
Being at home and in front of the TV and watching, you get all the radio, you get all the commentary, you can see lots of different timings and where they are on the track and everything. And it's so good to understand what's happening in the race. But then, like I said, as you know, as I know, being there at the track, you don't get that commentary. You don't get that team radio. You do get the timings and stuff like that, but it's just a whole different atmosphere and hearing the cars, and they smell like welding metal together. That's what it smells like when they come past because they've been sparking on the track. Like to smell that, to hear it, to see, you know, the dejected drivers walking back from their garage when they've been knocked out of qualification. Like these are the things that you don't get on the TV, and it is so worth being there.
The atmosphere is great. And speaking of the car sounds, the FIA and the teams have been looking at reintroducing the V10 engines in 2027 or 2028. And that's not going to happen. No V10 engine return just yet. It's been parked.
Boom, boom.
But you did talk about sponsors before. So I just wanted to come back to that and just give a big fat welcome to Barilla Pasta that have come on board as a new Formula One sponsor, a Italian company. They make pasta. You can buy their pasta all around the world. It was really nice to see the Barilla signage at the track watching the Grand Prix on TV, and nice to have some different sponsors coming into Formula One, like the introduction of the Louis Vuitton group, of course, at the start of the season, and just some non-tech companies.
Yeah. Not Atlassian and...
But it's really nice to see more household brands entering the sport.
See, I get that. But we actually mentioned it when we were watching the race and when we were going around the track. I saw the Barilla branding and I actually find it really polarizing to see it there.
Oh,
like it just feels... When you've got the LVMH group, but I think the Barilla branding just looks... It looks out of place, I think, compared to everything else that's there. And perhaps it's the actual, like, style of the branding, which I know you can't change because that's their logo, but it just it kind of looks like a suburban footy match.
Yeah, I guess when you look at Tag Heuer as and Louis Vuitton as brands, and then you look at Barilla, which, you know, is more pedestrian in every way, really. Even as far as pasta brands go, it's not a luxury pasta brand. It's an everyday pasta brand, but, you know, Formula One is for everyday people as well. So I hear what you're saying, but I'm excited to see brands like that and brands like Charlotte Tilbury, which have come into F1 Academy, which is a beauty brand, of course.
I hear what you're saying as well. Like, I totally get it. I think it's fabulous that it's not just exclusive luxury brands, but yeah, there was something polarizing about seeing it there. So, and I'll mull on that a little bit more and work out what it is that's making me go, ooh.
Mon, you're in Bahrain. Bahrain. Did I say that correctly?
Bahrain.
We're trying.
Tell us what's the country like? What are the people like? What's the food like? What do you see? What do you do? Where have you been? Yeah.
Give us everything. Oh, gosh. Honestly, it's such an intriguing country. It is so small. If you look at, you know, the map of the Gulf, you kind of almost miss Bahrain because it's so small. You have to like zoom in, zoom in, zoom in, zoom in.
Yep.
It's about 1 hour drive from the airport to the very bottom of the island.
Yeah, right.
So like really small. The most fascinating thing about being here is just the misconceptions that there are about what it means to be in a Middle Eastern country. Bahrain is one of the most liberal Gulf countries or kingdom. It's a kingdom. People think that you have to completely cover up and be very, very conservative. And yes, you've got to obviously err on the side of caution, but having your shoulders out isn't a big no-no. Like if you're wearing a singlet top, that's fine. Like so long as you're modestly covered. And a lot of the women here don't wear head coverings and stuff like that. So it's really liberal in that sense. Obviously, it's very easy to find alcohol, which is another thing that gets thrown around a lot about these Middle Eastern countries, is that you can't drink. You can. It just depends where you are. And you've got to be respectful of people that don't. Weather-wise, it has been 35 degrees and in the sun, very, very hot.
Are there many mosques around? Does it feel very religious? Do you hear the call from the mosques in the morning?
Well, right now we're on an island, but when we were on the mainland, didn't hear any of the call to prayer or anything like that. There is a very big mosque, and I've completely blanked on the name of it, but we've driven past both during the day and at night, and it's stunning, but it's quite a tourist attraction to go and see that.
I think that might be the Al-Fateh Grand Mosque. Does that sound about right?
It is, yes.
Yeah.
It is. And that's beautiful. We did go to the Bab al-Bahrain shopping precinct. It's really beautiful. My gosh, the gold jewellery that they have is absolutely stunning. And it's a very clean, orderly market and shopping area. And they have this beautiful pearling path that they've opened up, because Bahrain has been known forever for its pearls. This is something that maybe not many people know. They've kind of created this pearling path. It takes you past all these sites of significance and iconic buildings that had to do with the pearling industry, and you end up right on coastline. And then they've got like pearling museums and stuff like that. And it's really a huge part of Bahrain's identity and history. Right now, I have mentioned I'm on Hawa Island, which is actually closer to Qatar than it is to Bahrain. But this island, they're rewilding it so that they can get the cormorant back and get there's like little deers and dugongs, dolphins, flamingos, all sorts of things on this island. So the whole point of this resort is to rewild the island and have this nature reserve that people can come and visit.
Was the island destroyed by man or something for them to want to rewild it?
Basically, I think it was farming and fishing, and they just drove people off this island. And then when the people left this island, it was just sitting here kind of empty. Now they're trying to bring everything back, which I think is a really cool story, because again, when people think of Bahrain, they think desert and they think there's nothing there. But there is so much nature. Even driving here, like, okay, it's very flat and white deserty, but there's palm trees that pop up. There's a lot of flora and fauna around. I mean, there's a massive seagrass out here with dugongs on it. They said it's the second biggest colony of dugongs in the world. I just find it really fascinating, because everything that we're seeing and doing is very, I guess, opposite to what people expect of like a Middle Eastern country.
Visiting Bahrain is smashing all your preconceptions of what Bahrain is, I guess.
Yeah, what the Middle East is, it happened in Qatar as well. So that kind of started this, like, oh, why are people so worried about it being conservative? It has no effect on how I get around. And then Bahrain is similar. And the people are so nice. Like, I have not experienced this level of hospitality. They are so nice. And I think a lot of that has to do with they get a lot of Saudi Arabian people coming to Bahrain on the weekends. And there's a very different expectation, I guess, of the service that you're going to get between someone from Saudi Arabia and someone like me from Australia. I'm like, oh, no, you don't have to take my bags to my room. That's fine. I can do it. Whereas that's maybe probably expected. I think the hospitality is just like amazing.
Awesome. What about the food? Obviously, you're not home cooking, but what are some of the traditional dishes that you've been eating?
Funnily enough, last year I cooked a makbus, which I think you ended up cooking one as well.
So it was like a chicken and rice dish with almonds and lots of cinnamon and spice.
Yeah, so that's the makbus, which is very traditional. Yesterday we had another dish called kapsa, which again is another kind of rice, almost like a pilaf. Again, like you said, it's lots of spices, so cinnamons and cardamoms and, you know, blackened lime and stuff like that, and it's very fragrant. Then the stews that go on top almost taste like curry. And I know that's a very broad category of flavors to just pack into one word. But yeah, they've got so full of spice, and they've got heat to them. And
have you been eating lots of dates?
I was just going to say.
Oh, look.
I can't tell you how many dates we've had. They are divine.
They're the fruits of the gods. Yeah, for sure.
Right? It's like nature's candy. The best dates that I had here were stuffed with like crushed nuts. I think maybe walnuts and pistachios and cardamom. And they were so good. So good.
I've made stuffed dates at home, but stuffed with a tahini mix with nuts and dipped in chocolate as well.
Oh, yum.
So half the date is dipped in chocolate. You get the sweet, caramelly, salty, chewy, and then you've got the crunch of the hard chocolate on the outside. They're beautiful.
Yum. Yeah, and I'm just trying to think, but we did also have some beautiful Bahraini coffee. They use their local coffee beans, so it's not really strong coffee, but then they mix it with cardamom and cinnamon. I think it was cinnamon.
Oh, spicy coffee.
It was really nice. The food has been really, really, really nice.
And we're in race week again. God, I love these back-to-back races.
I know.
Off to Jeddah next week, Saudi Arabia, for the Grand Prix. So, Mon, have you got any race predictions for Jeddah?
I'm still riding the Piastri high. I feel like at the end of this race, I don't know if we're going to see him overtake Norris in the championship just yet.
It could very well happen. If he beats Norris in this next race, like in Saudi Arabia, he'll overtake him.
So I'm still riding the Piastri high. He's going to at least podium, at least. And
I'm going for Piastri for world champion this year. I said it ages ago.
You did.
And I'm going to say it again, that I think it's his year. Like I'm feeling it. He's just got that quiet determination.
Yeah.
Unflappable, even after that awful start to the season in Australia where he spun out and, you know, didn't have a great result. He's just bounced back and he's smashing it. And I'm here for it.
I feel awful because I was like, I don't know if it's going to be Piastri this year because I still think they're going to favour Norris. And now, God damn it, I wish I didn't say that. But you predicted it. That's your prediction. And I'd like to say in Jeddah, just purely because I really want to see it happen, that we're going to see Carlos Sainz finally click and have a good race. That's just because I really want it to happen.
I really want to see Carlos do well as well. Obviously, he had a DNF in Bahrain, but he qualified in 8th. So he had a really good session. Jack Doohan as well. He qualified in 11th, which is great for Jack.
Yes. With all that pressure that he's got on his shoulders and everyone saying that Colapinto's nipping at his heels for that spot. So long as he's not too far away from Gasly, and he's qualifying, I think it's good for him. I think he's getting his confidence. Like he's gaining confidence, especially after that Suzuka crash.
There was lots of conjecture and rumours flying around that Jack wouldn't even race in Bahrain, that he was injured, something about his hand. I was reading all sorts of things. I'm sure he's probably still bruised. He might still be in a bit of pain, but he's stepping up and managing it and just getting on with the job because he knows it's what's got to be done. So that's how I'm reading it.
Do you have one big prediction or?
I think it's going to be Oscar again. I'm going for Oscar for the win. I would love to see Kimi Antonelli on the podium and I would also love to see Lewis Hamilton on the podium. Wouldn't that be a great podium?
Literally, I was hoping for a McLaren, Mercedes and a Ferrari podium this week.
As long as it's not Norris, because I'm going for Oscar. And 5 minutes into the KO Sports broadcast, the Lando Norris bias coming from the Sky commentators
was
loud and clear, and it did not stop all race. At one point, I was yelling at the TV, and I'm so sick of hearing about Norris. For God's sake, there's like 19 other drivers on the grid. Anyway, my little rant.
I mean, we've got Piastri bias, but that's different.
We do have Piastri bias, but it's just the commentators, their job is to be impartial. Our job is to do a podcast. We try to be fair with our comments, but
we're not commentators.
We're not commentators, but we also declare our favourites, you know, so it's out there. So in the driver standings, Norris is leading 77 points. Piastri is second in 74 points. Then Verstappen still there, 69 points. Russell, 63 points. Leclerc, 32 points. Kimi Antonelli in sixth position with 30 points. Lewis Hamilton is behind him in seventh with 25 points. Alex Albon, a Williams, great, 18 points in eighth. Esteban Ocon in Haas, 14 points.
Good on him.
Lance Stroll, 10th, 10 points. Pierre Gasly, 6 points. Hülkenberg, 6 points. Behrmann, 6 points. Tsunoda, 5. Isaac Hadjar, 4. Carlos Sainz, just 1 point for Carlos. Nothing for Fernando Alonso, Lawson, Jack Doohan, or Gabriel Bortoleto. They're all on 0.
Oh. Am I correct in saying that Yuki scored his first points for Red Bull? He got 1 point.
Correct.
Yay! That's the first points for the second driver in a long time in Red Bull.
Okay. Yeah. So in the team standing, running through that quickly, we've got McLaren in first on 151, Mercedes on 93 points, Red Bull on 71 points, Ferrari on 57 points, Haas in fifth with 20 points, Williams with 19 points, Aston Martin in seventh with 10 points, Racing Bulls in eighth place with 7 points, and Alpine with 6 points, and Kick Sauber dead last on 6 points.
Oh my gosh, can we just take a moment to reflect on that gap between McLaren and Mercedes right now?
It is 58 points already, 4 races in.
Wow.
Oh, shout out to Pierre Gasly scoring points this week. Yeah. First time Alpine have scored points all season.
He had a belter of a race.
He did. He really did. He qualified really well and finished really well.
And I also have to give it to Ocon. He had a crash in FP2, spun off into the wall, and he managed to come back and get points. Well done.
With that, Mon, I think we need to let you go and jump in the Gulf in that beautiful ocean right outside your overwater bungalow.
Wait,
wish me a happy birthday for tomorrow. You need to do that.
So before we go, everyone needs to message us and comment on our Facebook page, do all the things, because it's Di's birthday. She bought herself a Ferrari red birthday jacket. So everyone needs to wish Di a happy birthday for tomorrow.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also, I mean, if you just want to have a chat with us, or you have any opinions on any of our opinions, because we like to be opinionated, you can message us, comment on our Facebook page. You can do all the things. We're on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, TikTok, and YouTube. You can send us an email to andawaywego f1podcast@gmail.com.
Thank you. And don't forget to subscribe to our channel on YouTube. Rate and review the podcast on your favorite podcast listening apps. It really does help us, and it helps our podcast rank higher and reach more listeners, which is what we want, to share the Formula One love as far and wide as possible. Thank you for the birthday wishes. Thank you, Mon. And thank you, guys, for having us in your ears. Until next week, and until lights out.
It's lights out. Away we go!
And Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto and Monique Ciccato. Let's do it.